Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 61. This episode's with Colin Hanks. We actually recorded this in late December, and the reason I haven't put it up yet is because I had a bunch of time-sensitive podcasts that went up between now and then. So this is the punishment that poor Colin Hanks gets for having an episode that was not time-sensitive. But it was a fantastic episode, and he was super cool, and so I'm glad to be able to finally put it up. I also want to ask you to join our Facebook group. Like us, facebook.com/Nerdist. Do it. It's a push of a button, for crap's sake. Also, I would like to welcome back our sponsors from last week, Falcon Northwest Computers. Hooray! It's just me here clapping. So, these are goodly nerds working in the Pacific Northwest. They will custom build a computer for you if you want a desktop or a laptop PC. If you want it customized with artwork, they will do that for you. These obviously are computers for game players, content creators, business people, any type of PC you want. They've been doing this for almost 20 years. They actually build them by hand. They will support them. They're not on some ridiculous assembly line. These guys take time and care, and they follow your instructions. And they're nice. There's nothing better than nice nerds in the world, in my opinion. So what would be great, if you're in the market for a computer, go to falcon-nw.com. Check it out. Look at all the reviews. They've been reviewed by so many companies and given like 5 out of 5 stars and editor's choice picks that your brain will literally start to seep out of your ear in amazement. And then you can stuff it back in, and then you can figure out what kind of computer you want. So again, falcon-nw.com. These are good dudes. They have great computers. Falcon Northwest Computers, masters of handcrafted silicon. And now on to the Nerdist Podcast number 61 with the very patient and delightful Mr. Colin Hanks. You're nice.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
All that gold?
I have to redo the God farting thing.
Could you please make the thunder happen again so I can yell at Janet?
Hold on. I'll call my friend Storm.
Paul and? oh, you mean Storm, the X-Man Storm.
From the X-Men.
From the X-Men.
The X-Men program. Colin Hanks is here! Colin Hanks! Yay! The CH off, as you said in your email.
Not only is it a CH off, but I'm also noticing that you've got a light-up globe that has the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics on it. I have one as well.
I keep hoping they'll go back.
So it's a globe CH off.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
This is epic. I better get out of the way.
This just got a shade darker. I'm telling you. This got deeper and deeper.
Bringing it to a dark place.
This will probably go up after the new year, but right now the sky has opened up and has rained apocalypse all over Los Angeles today.
If you saw the road, it's looking like that outside.
It's not so much piss pouring, it's just pissing
just
all over.
A lot of piss everywhere. And we live up on a hill, so it's sort of like we can sort of look down at everything, but getting up here is...
It's like you would need a canoe almost. It's almost getting to the point.
I live down the mountain, pretty much. I mean, down at the base of this mountain on a different street, mm-hmm. and the entire road has pretty much just become like a whitewater rapid. Like, I'm expecting Meryl Streep in like a raft to like come down my road any moment now with Kevin Bacon slowly like, you know, chasing after her.
With a gun in her back.
That was the second Kevin Bacon whitewater rafting movie.
Well, Sean Astin is not far behind.
Exactly, yes. He was in the other one, Whitewater Summer.
Oh, right.
Driving up here is like going up in Splash Mountain.
It is.
Yeah. We see all the water engineering.
But let's get back
to just as many animatronics, which is weird for this neighborhood.
I put a bunch of rabbits up the hill going, how do you do? Yeah. I got to see you.
And then you come down and you're like, this is the payoff. Yeah. Nope, not yet.
Brer Fox and Brer Bear.
And then you realize it's all based on a very racist cartoon.
I don't remember seeing a tar baby in the in Splash Mountain.
I don't remember seeing that tar baby.
They did not put the tar baby in Splash Mountain.
No.
But they do have Brer Fox.
It was probably broken.
It might have been broken.
What's going on? What are you doing? Oh, they're singing chickens on the riverboat.
Splash Mountain's always one of those ones you think is a good idea to save it for last because the line's usually the longest, even if you fast pass it.
Yeah.
And then you get horribly soaked and then you're freezing.
It's the worst idea.
Yeah, it is absolutely the worst.
You want to go first, dry off during the day.
Yep. No, but I was.
No, I disagree. You get wet, then you get the chafe.
Once.
Yes.
Oh, that's the worst.
Once I went.
I'll get the chafe anyway.
It was dead, and the gentleman loading the ride was like, why don't you sit in front? And I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea.
No, it'll go way faster.
So I sit in front. We're supposed to have two people behind us. The other two guys are like, oh, no, we can get our own too because it's dead. And we go, when we go down the hill, it's like a fucking submarine diving. Because I just launch the thing into the water. Water just gushes up, and I've never been more wet in my entire life. It almost submerged.
You were on Finding Nemo, actually.
The Finding Nemo ride was kind of a bummer. Have you been on it?
I have, yeah.
It just feels like... just throw some of that shit over there and let's...
It's a weird ride to begin with. I mean, because the original one was just... So the first half of the ride is just like, ooh, really poorly constructed plastic fish.
Yep. Yeah, just going in the circle.
And then you go into the mountain, and I still don't understand where it goes in relationship from the entrance of that cave to, like, the exit.
I don't know.
I want to know what's on the other side of that. And, like, just, like, does it go underneath a road, you know, under, like, a Carl's Jr. parking lot? I don't know. How do they have the space within the confines of Disneyland? But then, like, what happens in there is just animation.
Yes, and
project animation onto a screen.
Which you don't really need to be in a submarine to see.
No!
I like to have a lot of anxiety when I'm watching shitty animation.
Yeah, the problem with Finding Nemo was that I didn't feel like my heart was going to shit because I was having a claustrophobic anxiety attack. So, let's stay. Yeah. I mean, there was just such an afterthought where they were like, well, we got the underwater thing.
It's been closed. It had been closed for years.
Long time.
Yeah. Long time.
Because I hadn't seen it open since I was a kid.
In Disney World, they just... paved it.
No one cares about it. Into,
my old roommate Will Wheaton and I had annual passes at Disneyland when we were 18, and we used to go like every night during one summer. And Disneyland was awesome, and they had the Skyway, which they got rid of because someone killed themselves.
Yeah,
they had the people mover with Tron in it.
Yes, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe awesome in our collective memory.
Yeah. I'll remember it that way.
Well, do you remember the shrinking ride that they had?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
That body? What was that?
It was the first thing that you went into if you were on the people mover.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And Body Worlds.
That was in Disney World.
Body Worlds? No, that
was it Body Wars?
No, Body Worlds was the exhibit where they cut people.
No, that's Body Works.
No, that's Body Works. I'm telling you, it's a thing.
There was a thing where Walt Disney had cross-sected giant humanoid mice, and you could see their musculoskeletal structures.
Listen, guys.
You know they used to have people climb the Matterhorn back in the day?
They still do.
They still do?
Yeah.
And they had a Tinkerbell like zip line down from the top of the Matterhorn.
And then she would hit her eye at the set of Oprah.
Yep, that's right. She would zip line right to the set of Oprah.
Oh, as soon as I saw him going that fast, I was so like, "Oh, fast. Hugh, this is not going to go well."
Yeah.
But doesn't he seem like the kind of guy who's like, "I'll do anything."
Yeah. The first thing I thought is Hugh. You are Wolverine. You don't have to do that. I know you're welcoming Oprah, arguably the world's biggest star, onto your country.
Mm-hmm.
But you're big enough that you can just walk onto the stage and say, "Welcome to my Australia." Yeah. You don't have to. It's such an Australian thing to be like, "I'm going to go across a harbor attached to a wire from our most iconic building to go welcome the lady from Chicago."
Yep.
You don't need to do that. Walk out,
you
buddy.
Sure you know when to walk on? Nah, I got a zip line down there so I can... I need to fly onto stage.
So bad.
He's all right, though, right?
Yeah.
He healed up real
fast. He's got like a metal exoskeleton.
I've just received a note from
an intern that has Google.
I've just received a note from Janet Varney saying that it was called Adventure Through Inner Space.
Oh, there you go.
Inner Space, not to be confused with the Joe Dante film,
which was phenomenal,
which was amazing.
Yes, it's a great movie. It's on Instant Watch right now, and I've watched it a few times since it's got on Netflix Instant Watch. It's great. I constantly watch Joe Dante movies.
I oftentimes think someone has injected Martin Short into my body. No, I'm sorry. It was the reverse. Someone has injected Dennis Quaid.
But Dennis Quaid from Breaking Away.
Yeah. You don't want to get injected with Randy Quaid. He'll just fucking ransack your body and leave it for dead.
Now that's a scary thing.
It's the only way to hide from the Hollywood star whackers.
I had to erase his computer, and it was awkward.
You did?
Yes. At the Apple Store.
Why? That is the most interesting thing to bring to the table. I had to erase his computer, and it was awkward.
Did you see anything wacky?
He didn't ask for it.
No, he wanted to give it to his maid.
He's so
confused. No, wait, I'm confusing him and the principal from Ferris Bueller.
Oh, no, you're thinking of Jeffrey Jones.
I had to erase both of their computers, though.
Who I saw at an Apple Store not too long ago.
Jeffrey Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Getting his iPhone set up.
His hair always unkempt.
He's the editor of the Deadwood newspaper, apparently, Jeffrey Jones.
Wow.
I was a huge Jeffrey Jones fan, and he was in so many great movies.
My hair would be unkempt if I had to register as a sex offender also.
What happened to Howard the Duck? What happened to Howard the Duck? I'm skating over your sexual offender comment.
We're not going to touch that one.
Listen.
with a 10-foot kid.
Howard the Duck... for some reason to this day, the Howard Duck theme melody is like still stuck in my head from the closing credits.
Howard
the Duck. Dip, 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 beel it. Come on, dude, straight to my heart. Howard the Duck. I don't understand why that is still stuck in my head. I mean, it made an impression. That's a hit record right there. That is a hit record.
It says a lot about it. The credits are rolling. Everyone's looking around at each other. We did a great movie with a hit record attached to it.
It is very telling about a movie when what you remember from it is the closing credit theme.
Howard
the Duck.
The monster was really scary. I remember that. I haven't watched that in a very long time.
The Dark Overlords of the Universe. Yeah. I mean, even as a kid when I was like, really, the device is the Dark Overlords of the Universe? Come on.
Yeah, I remember that just scared me. When the three of them were coming in that stationary, super cheesy, like, special effect move where they're obviously just standing in place, but the camera is moving at them rather quickly.
We're moving, but we're standing still.
That scared me.
I wanted to see a whole movie in Duck World. I wanted an entire movie in Duck World.
And that is a movie that absolutely...
No one wanted to make.
Howard the Duck in our world.
Up, Chris. They queued that up, but nope.
Not
so much.
They teed it up, and then it was all Leah Thompson in Human World.
Now, that was after... Back to the Future.
Yeah. I think Howard the Duck was maybe 87.
So yeah,
that was
say
like her next thing.
Ouch. What was her next thing? I think I feel like I need to IMDb it. That.
What year was Space Camp? That was what, 80...
Space Camp, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Space Camp.
With,
Living the Dream. Space Camp.
with Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh yeah.
Was he Leaf at that point, or
he was Leaf?
He was still Leaf at that point.
He was still Leaf.
Okay, I'm looking up as we speak. There's nothing more fun than looking up things on the internet on a podcast, but I really want to know what Leah Thompson's follow-up to Back to the Future was.
Janet set a bad precedent by running that into information into us. Now we're like, we need the information.
She doesn't care about non-Disneyland rides.
We just got to talk to her as if she's a computer. Janet!
Yes?
I made my computer just answer back like a sassy lady.
Okay, here we go. So, 1985, Back to the Future, followed up by Space Camp.
Okay.
Followed up by Howard the Duck, followed up by...
Jaws 3.
No, one of my favorite movies, Some Kind of Wonderful, 1987. Then 1988, Casual Sex.
Oh, yeah, with Victoria Jackson.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of sex romps in the late 80s. There were comedy sex romps.
Where was Jaws 3D? Where did that happen?
Oh, 84? That was pre. Jaws 3D was 83. All the Right Moves, 83. Decent movie. Red Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
84.
She had
the Wildlife. 84.
Avenge me.
Yep.
Avenge
84.
Me.
Then around 88, it gets weird. The Wizard of Loneliness. Schwa? Going Undercover. I don't. And then Nightbreaker in 89. I'm not sure what that is.
That's a great song, just, too.
Nightbreaker! The Duck!
Breaking into the night!
then the Back of the Future.
Nightbreaker!
And then Dennis the Menace. She was Mrs. Mitchell in Dennis the Menace.
Oh,
oh
shit.
Wow.
But those three, the Back to the Future, Space Camp, and then Howard the Duck, those are three comedy sci-fi movies in a row.
She was the comedy sci-fi queen in the 80s.
Yeah, she's a later day...
She was a Hollywood it girl.
She was a Hollywood it girl. And then she did Caroline in the City.
Oh, that's right. I like that.
Oh, wow.
And I'm so sorry that we brought Colin Hanks on to talk about Leah Thompson's resume.
I was about to say.
So what was your favorite Leah Thompson movie here? Lee, guys going to Leah Thompson Con?
Here's the deal. You remember Caroline in the City, or is it because you were just looking at a resume? Because I totally forgot about that.
I remembered that show. I
liked it. I thought it was so hot. It was a cartoonist girl in the city.
Yeah.
And there was that weird guy that was in a lot of stuff at that
time. The rollerblading guy? Or the guy, the main dude in that? Because there was a delivery. Never mind. I remember too much about that show. I'll stop.
Colin, so when you were growing up, did you ever think it would turn out this way for Leah Thompson?
Yeah, totally.
We all did.
I mean, after Howard the Duck, I think the writing was on the wall. I think it's pretty obvious.
I hope you get known as being a Leah Thompson.
What was the name of her show on Lifetime?
What?
Reruns
of Caroline in the City.
It was actually called... Give me back my daughter.
It was called like I. Never mind. I'll never get it.
I lost my daughter on a trip.
But let's admit it. We all had a crush on Leah Thompson.
Of course, yes,
absolutely.
Who wouldn't?
Of course.
But I want to know: did you grow up in Los Angeles, or did you grow up on the East Coast?
I actually grew up in Northern California. My parents split up, as many parents have a tendency to do.
Yeah, me too.
In the 80s.
Yes.
My dad lived down here. Obviously, and my mom lived up in Sacramento. So I sort of commuted back and forth. I'm sort of a very much Northern California boy, but with semi-Southern Californian roots.
You do have a nice NorCal Bay Area vibe.
I do. I've got the NorCal vibe.
Which is a nice vibe.
Thank you.
It is a very
Thank
nice
you
vibe.
Very much.
Can't
I appreciate
that.
It.
Can't
you cannot
that.
Teach no, the NorCal
teach
vibe.
It.
I don't know why Northern California hates us so much. But
oh,
they
Southern California?
Probably
hate us.
Because we think Hella came from Orange County.
I fucked that up
it
big
was
time.
From the, Bay Area.
The first time I heard Hella was from in a No Doubt song, and they were from Orange County. I got assaulted because I didn't properly credit Hella
the
as coming from
thing
the Bay Area.
Is, I remember when I moved to LA in college, and I didn't realize the amount of which Hella was used in my vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I said it, everyone goes, and this was in Orange County, as a matter of fact. Everyone goes, Northern California.
Already making you feel bad.
Already made me feel bad, yeah. And so Hella is most definitely a Northern California. And there's a group called Hella.
There is?
It's a metal-ish band.
Yeah, I've never really heard much of their stuff. I've heard like a couple of things here and there, but remember their drummer is like insane.
Yeah, they have an
insanely talented drummer.
Like a math you know, like a mathematician.
Math geniuses.
A crazy math genius. And he did a bunch of... He played drums for like Les Claypool on a couple of records. Some of Les's like solo records and stuff.
Actually,
like
he's drumming for this guy, this girl, Marnie Stern, right now, who's like a really like very technical guitar player lady. But I think that guy's drumming for them right now.
I want to know where else you could talk, you could hear... about the movie Innerspace, Leah Thompson, and Les Claypool all in the same 10 minutes.
My brain? There's a reason why we're talking about it. It's because I'm here.
We met at the Thrilling Adventure Hour, which was awesome. So much
amazing.
Fun.
So much fun.
Was that your first time doing it?
First time. Very first time. I had been hearing about it through Aaron, and because Aaron wrote on The Good Guys, so we would there were a couple of times in Dallas over drinks, a multitude of drinks. You got to come and do this adventure show.
okay,
sure. But yeah, first time I ever did it, it was an absolute blast to do because there's no pressure. Whatsoever,
right?
It's just absolute unbridled fun because you don't have to worry about lines or anything.
No,
like that.
And for people who don't know, Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is now a podcast, it was a live, basically like sci-fi comedy musical radio play series that was done that's been done in Los Angeles for the last few years.
And they did it like at M Bar.
Started at M Bar and then it moved to Largo, and now they have enough of a following where all the shows sell out and and so much fun people. Like you did the show, and Nathan Fillion did the show, and Kevin Pollak did the show, and Alison Brie, and it's just a lot of fun. Paul F. Tompkins and Paget Brewster. It's a super, super, super fun show.
How long have you been doing it?
I did my first one earlier this year, and I think that was my fourth or fifth one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're always super
Is there
fun.
Anyone that's been doing it like from the very beginning, aside from Ben and Aaron?
I think Paul F. has been telling me about it for years.
Ben Acker's been working with Paul like since before that show, and I think they kind of got into that together.
The Bens, Acker and Blacker. Acker and Ben Blacker. We were Janet and I were trying to figure out the other night. Did they team up because of their names?
Wouldn't
like they
you?
Have to.
I guess you have
you
to.
Just like
to.
You guys are going to team up eventually because of the whole CH. And
that's in the sequel. That's in the sequel. In this movie, we're enemies. In the next one, we're going
to
be friends.
We come together to fight USSR.
Spoilers.
We come together to fight the USSR on our global
The USSR, exactly. With
they
our light,
team up
with
to
our light
recreate.
Of globes.
Two worlds collide. Rival nations.
What did the world look like during the Cold War? Someone tell us.
I don't know.
You guys know?
Reaganomics.
Did you... Were you a nerdy kid growing up, or were you like an outdoorsy kid? What was your?
I don't know. I sort of like feel like I was. I always sort of described it as like the social butterfly because I had like just elements of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely had the inner geek thing going, but didn't necessarily have other people to geek out with. That's always the way it was sort of for me. Like I had all of these interests, but I never really had anyone that I could find that shared those same interests.
Okay.
And then by the time I got to be a little bit more, around the time you get to 15, 16, all that sort of stuff kind of gets thrown aside because you're like, oh, I'm just more interested in just trying to meet girls and be cool. But I just ended up taking that same geekdom and applying it to stuff that I thought would make me look cool, and it didn't. So, you know, growing up, it was, you know, Star Wars, obviously, and pretty much every movie that was on cable, because that was like the dawn of, you know, Critters and all of those.
Yes,
so I have
Critters.
Like a total appreciation for really, really shitty movies.
But that was like HBO was like play nothing but horror.
Yeah.
That's so, like Evil Dead 2 was on constantly.
Exactly. So I have that in me, and then the music geek in me because I was like, oh, the chicks will dig me for my musical taste. No, they don't dig me for my musical tastes at all. And so I would just sort of – I always find myself being really fascinated with stuff and – finding myself pretty much alone in that fascination, at least in terms of like my friends that I'm friendly with.
I relate 100%. This is a true story, and it happened again when I tried to show Janet this movie. when I was in high school, there was a girl I liked, and I was really into the animated Transformers movie. Stop laughing! God damn it! That sucks.
That is okay. There, but let's talk about that.
Let's
talk about this.
Let's talk about
first
it. Orson Welles,
Dare to Be Stupid.
Dare to Be Stupid. Weird Al song. Orson Welles' last movie.
Last movie with Orson Welles.
Leonard Nimoy, Judd Nelson, Eric Idle. Like, it had the elements, plus the Transformers.
Yeah.
So I thought there was a scene in the Transformers movie where Megatron becomes Galvatron, who was made so by Unicron, the robot-shifting planet-eater.
Of course.
Voiced by Orson Welles.
And he, when we first hear Leonard Nimoy's voice, he is now the new Megatron. And he kills Starscream. Now, if you watch Transformers, that is basically like if someone came in and shot Ross or Rachel. It was a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
And I was so floored by this scene that I had a girl over.
Too much change.
I even showed her that one scene. That didn't work out well. Years later... I tried to show Jan.
Part two.
I tried to show Jan. I'm like, okay, I bought Transformers the movie on DVD, the cartoon, the animated series. Let's watch it. Maybe we got 10 minutes in, and Janet just got up laughing and goes, "This is garbage."
And Janet is a nerdily minded lady.
Very nerdily minded. Yeah. The problem is that what I failed to realize as a teen is that Transformers the movie, the cartoon, not the Michael Bay explosathon, was so heavily laced with wall-to-wall Stan Bush 80s inspirational rock that it really gets in the way.
You got the touch.
Everything is...
Well, that's where it is. That's the original You Got the Touch.
Yeah. Stan
Bush. You Got
the
Power.
Yep. Yeah. That Mark Wahlberg sings.
That Mark Wahlberg sings in the Boogie Nights. How about...
Are you playing Stan Bush now, sweetheart? Yeah. Thank you.
But let's also go one further. There was an S-bomb in the Transformers movie.
Yes! There was an S-bomb.
There was an S-bomb.
Doesn't it from Spike?
Yes.
Doesn't he go, yes.
He goes, I just remember, there are very few things I remember the first time I saw that movie, but I vividly remember all of us going, oh my God.
That was unheard of.
They said shit.
Mm-hmm.
Shit!
Yep.
In a cartoon. Shit. Oh shit! In a cartoon for kids.
Yep.
I think once Starscream was killed, it stopped being for kids.
Yeah.
Once Optimus Prime was killed.
Sorry. Yeah.
That's like killing E.T. That's like molesting E.T.
Molesting E.T.'s corpse.
I want that to happen because I hated E.T.
Did you really?
It was an alien. It terrified the shit out of me.
Oh, it scared you? Yeah, well, you're a little kid, too.
You're just like the government in that movie.
Yeah, very similar. Except I still have killed my guns. Too. I don't have a walkie-talkie.
What was this idea that other worlds are frozen? Like, E.T. came back to life by being put in a freezer. Starman was rejuvenated when his space orb snowed on him.
Ice pirates.
That's kind of racist.
I'm wondering how many women we lost from the Leia Thompson.
They don't listen. No women listen to this podcast.
I'm wondering. No, but I'm thinking we might have won some over with the Leia Thompson part, and now we're definitely losing them with the Transformers part.
We'll get
the
back.
Original Transformers.
We like to jump around the map as much as possible. Try to keep the audience thinking.
Jump around the golden USSR. Lit up globe.
Were your parents cool about, like, were you allowed to watch R-rated comedies, or were they kind of like, eh? Like, my parents let me watch pretty much anything.
For a period, I could pretty much watch anything. Yeah. I mean, like, I pretty much lived with my mom, and so there was a golden period where pretty much I could watch anything that was on TV.
And part of the benefits of being a child of divorce is that your parents,
like, just,
they want to win you over.
Or a latchkey kid.
Just watch that TV. Just do. I've got
some more chocolates.
I got some shit I got to work out. You watch that TV.
Stay with the babysitter now.
Yeah. And then once surprisingly, once she found Jesus,
okay, okay.
Things needed to change, and that some things are going to change in this household.
Jesus does not appreciate Spike yelling "Oh shit!" at the robot eating planet.
No, and MTV is Satan. You know,
that, to that extent, really?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so.
I got a lot of that. I used to do a show for MTV, and a lot of people who grew up in the 90s would say, I used to have to sneak MTV, because I think of MTV as being remarkably corporate and tame. But I guess in the 90s, it was... At the time, it was very...
Oh, shit, that's right. You were on that show.
I did that show,
You did that show.
I did that show.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, at the time, it was... It was you know, at some point... people thought radio was dangerous.
Right.
Like, the devil's music is coming out of radio.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from Jerry Lee Lewis's hands
mm-hmm.
and Elvis's hips.
That's right.
And coming through
they were not
radio,
wrong, though.
And they're coming to impregnate your children with
devil babies.
Devil babies. And then for a period, it was kind of like that with the MTV... you know,
they thought the tiki god was going to come and murder their children.
People looked at Adam Curry's hair and said, "No way, we're not having
evil." It's Kevin McDonald's
evil. But then, now you sort of look at it and you just go, "Oh no, it's not really MTV at all."
It's, no, it's because I heard
the horrible music they play.
Yes,
maybe.
I heard "Baby Got Back" the other day for the first time in a long time, and I listened to the lyrics, and I had to remind myself, MTV banned this video.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the most tame rap songs with some very educated references in it, mind you.
Have you heard 2 Live Crew? Lately?
I've seen...
No.
I saw Miso Two Live Crew about, like, 4 years ago.
Have you heard Miso Horny?
Yeah.
It's some of the worst rapping of all time.
It's the
worst. Sitting at home watching Arsenio Hall. For a freak to call. There's no... It's like Luke Skywalker, not his real name.
No.
Just picked four random dudes off the street.
I think it was Keith Skywalker originally.
In Miami said... I'm going to make you a rap star. Because
yep.
They've got no rhythm.
But you know what? America said, fine. For some reason, America said, fine.
Yeah. Don't worry, guys. Don't worry. I know that you've got no rhythm. Here's the deal. We're going to be so dirty. It's not going to matter. We're going to make... I'm going to make so much money.
When I saw them, and they did not relent. It was... I consider the feeling of the show is much akin to what a cockfight would be like. Just dangerous. You don't know what's about to happen. There's blood. There's fucking shit everywhere. Everyone's yelling and going everywhere. It was the most insane show I'd ever seen. It was at CineSpace, of all places.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It was
CineSpace?
Really weird. Really, really weird.
Like that the little girls, alternative
the
huge, chapel?
The booty girls. You? The booty girls got naked and like started like rubbing their crotches in each other's faces. It was insane.
I heard a story. This is actually one of the funniest stories I've ever heard. One of the guys from the camera department on The Good Guys, we were exchanging just like funny just stories in which it was one of those sort of nights where it's 3 a.m. and we're trying to find a reason to keep living, and so we just start telling each other stories. And he tells me this story. He goes to a concert. This is going to seem like it's out of nowhere, but this is in relation to your story. He goes to, I think it was like a Dr. Dre concert in like, you know, early 93. Snoop Dogg is there. And this guy who I will rename,
we will rename him nameless.
Nameless thought it would be really, you know, Nameless had taken some psychedelic Smurfs before the show. So, of course, this heightens everything. But he tells me that at one point, like before Dr. Dre goes on, this guy gets up and it's sort of like the pre... I don't know if he's like a Dallas local guy or whatever, but he's the guy that's in charge of pumping up the crowd before Dr. Dre comes on. And he comes out and he's like, "Yeah, woo! Yeah! Oh, who else is it? Hey!" And it's just like, it's just totally chaotic. And he's just sitting there and it turns into him saying, "I want to see some titties. Anyone want to see some titties?" And everyone's like, yeah, sure. He's like, oh, let's bring up some girls up on stage and show us your titties. Wow. And he brings up 10 ladies up on 10 ladies willingly come up on stage to show themselves. And it's that he gets them in a line, and the first one, he's like, all right, first, show us your titties. And she does, and the crowd goes, ah, and he's like, oh, look at that, oh, man, that's great, oh, man, pour some water on your shirt, you know, da da da. This is a, number two, it's the same thing with number, show us your titties, woo, everybody screaming, everything's great. Shows number three, show us your titties, woo, number four, show us your titties. She shows, she lifts her top up, and he goes, oh, God, those are the worst titties I've ever seen. Oh, and everyone is like laughing, hysterical. And he goes, all right, number five. And then my friend says someone was calling to him off stage. And he goes, what? Number five, show. Wait, what? Oh, we can't do this? All right, Dr. Dre's up next. And he just walks off stage. He does. And everybody just goes back into the audience. But the timing of that is perfect. What? Number five, show us your teeth. What? Oh, we can't do this? All right, Dr. Dre's up next.
I feel like this needs some closer dissection. Number one, anytime's the right time for titties, whether you're at a Dr. Dre concert or at home. Number two, can there be anything more? First of all, completely demeaning.
Completely.
Completely demeaning just to get them up there and say, let's see some titties. And then to qualify the titties, give them a value judgment of those are the worst titties I've ever seen when someone is exposing themselves to thousands of people.
Oh, did Nameless agree, though? Were they the worst titties he'd ever seen?
He has absolutely no recollection as to the quality of said breasts. He just knows that it was one of the funniest things he's ever seen. To hear this guy go, oh, those are the worst titties I've ever seen!
What makes a worst titty, I wonder?
Probably a poor areola ratio.
You think so?
Areola to boob ratio, maybe some sand.
You think a conical shape and a
scarring from an accident, boobs,
pointing down accident. In yeah. abject that's sadness. Of, yeah.
So that we it looks like
it could be a little bit of the old Marty Feldman, you know, just a little.
Like
a
what? one googly tip?
Yeah.
I think any of the guys listening to this podcast we just blew their chance of them getting a girl.
Again,
you're missing our audience here, Colin. I think.
Anyways, that seemed like a very Two Live Crew.
Yes.
Thing.
It's
a moment. It, that's why my brain went there.
Yeah. No, I saw a similar thing happen. I went to some. Me and a couple of my friends ended up at a R. Kelly after party somewhere in Koreatown once, where he got up on stage, started
R. Kelly. The words R. Kelly, after party, and Koreatown, I feel, should never be uttered in the same sentence. Nothing good is going to come from that.
Well, I put some baking soda and some vinegar, and then gasoline and fire.
It was together. It was the worst thing, putting that styrofoam in the gasoline, but
but we did it.
That was the same. But he started singing, you know, I'm in love with a stripper, or you know, one of the, I can't remember. It was a really drunken night, but like it was just like girl after girl doing like just stripping and grinding up against him, and then like. He didn't sing at all. He just kept on bringing girl after girl up. And then I think I was asked to like move away from some velvet rope, and then we just left. But it was a very odd night.
You're too close to the rope.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you get invited to an R. Kelly? How do you even... Who finds out about that?
It was with Aziz.
Oh, it was with Aziz. Yeah. Okay.
So like, you know, he's like, come on, man, I'll pick you up. And then like he picked me up at my apartment, and then we went there. I was like, why did you bring me here?
Can I tell you something about Aziz Ansari? He has recommended like some of the best restaurants I've ever eaten at.
That's all he does.
Came from recommendations that
I
Aziz
hear
made.
He's a big foodie.
He is an enormous food. Like, I just texted him the other day, and I was like, okay, I'm on the road a lot. Where should I eat? And he was like, all right, I'll send you the same list I sent Tim and Eric. And he sent me this long list of restaurants city by city.
Yeah,
he's a big foodie.
Like when he first went out here, he's like, hey, man, where's Torrance? I was like, oh, it's like in the South Bay. And he was like, can we go? And then we would have to go to, like, you know, Torrance to go find some place that he heard about. And that was like pretty much every
time.
It's
probably delicious, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Colin, are you, you seem to, because I follow you on the tweets, you seem to like comedy, live comedy. You listen to Comedy Death Ray Radio?
Yeah.
Did you ever do stand-up? Did you ever want to do stand-up?
I mean, I've always been a super fan of stand-up. I've never really felt like I could assemble material to do it. In terms of actually sitting down and putting the honest to goodness hard work into it, I don't I don't pretend to have the ability to be able to do that in a way that I think would be... I've talked myself into a box.
No way out.
So no. I mean, would I like to try it? Yes. Do I find myself in scenarios in my professional life in which I am placed in front of a large audience with a microphone? Am I comfortable in those scenarios? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do I miss performing in front of people and making people laugh? Yes, I do. I have all of the mathematics are there, but I just never really have taken the time to try and put together, you know, material. And again, you know, never really around anybody else that did. Mm-hmm. So then again, I found myself in a position in which I have this sort of itch to scratch and I have no one else to you know, bounce ideas off of.
Well, I'll tell you, because now what's going to happen, and I'm predicting it now. So you did Thrilling Adventure Hour. Have you done Comedy Death Ray Radio yet?
I did that like a few days ago.
Okay. So you did Scott's. Yeah. So what's going to happen is...
You're the third.
Who's the first?
Kevin Pollak.
Oh, you did Pollak's?
Yes.
Oh, that's such a fun show.
That's a very fun show.
Kevin's great.
That's very fun.
So what'll happen...
I don't know who wants to talk to me about my life for 2 hours.
Kevin Pollak will.
I mean, it's free therapy right there.
It's really good.
Free therapy.
In a Charlie Rose setting.
In a Charlie Rose setting.
But I feel like you will start to get absorbed by the comedy community. And
John Hamm.
Hamm.
Yeah.
Well, Hamm used to go to all the Death Ray shows. Like he was a hardcore.
He's
already been like hanging out in the comedy scene for years. I know that. But like once he kind of like accepted the fact that he would appear in things or be on people's shows is when he was just on everything.
Well, what's gonna happen next is that I'm sure Scott will call you and then you'll end up doing a Death Ray, which will be super fun. And then people will start asking you to do more shows at Largo. And so what'll happen is you might find yourself accidentally doing comedy without even really planning it.
That's fine.
And you won't have to go on the road.
I won't have to do any of that.
Because your goal is probably not to do an hour special and.
No. But that comedy has definitely been one of those things that, I mean, for as long as I can remember, it's always been something that I've been very interested in and very attuned to. And so, you know, I mean, I just remember, for me, there's no difference between sitting up in your room and doing this is geeky.
There's no difference between
sitting up in your room and doing a wicked air guitar solo and sitting in front of a mirror and mouthing somebody else's stand-up routine.
Of course. Yeah.
It's the exact same thing.
Absolutely.
And so for me, I have just as much appreciation for not just stand-up, but sketch as well. I mean, you know, just comedy in general that I do for music. But I don't pretend that, you know, I'm going to be a kick-ass musician.
Of course, there is no, for Xbox yet, there is no comedy.
That's true. Comedy hero?
Yeah. Comedy hero. Comedy hero.
Right.
You got to hit all the Mitch Hedbergs. Yeah.
It's like, hey, everybody, hope I'm funny. I never nailed that part. Live on the Sunset Strip. That's like expert level, and I can't ever get there.
I got Bill Hicks arcing ropes, hitting chins.
Exactly.
Fuck, I missed it.
Exactly. Yeah. There are dick jokes on the way. Yeah. That one I can get.
For the Wii, there should be a Gallagher game, though, you know, just really.
Smash a melon.
Yeah, we can do that. That good early level.
Yeah, well, you know what? E3's coming up. We still have plenty of time. We can get it going.
That's true. We'll start putting the word out during CES.
Wii Gallagher. Yeah. I think Gallagher would look really great as a little Nintendo avatar.
I'm gonna make that.
I can picture it. We can actually could probably make that.
Yeah. You throw a hat on him and he just sort of looks like Mario, right?
He kinda does. But with long hair.
Yeah.
Hey, like Mario, I smashed this melon.
He's Mario's hippie cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah. His Mario's crazy right wing hippie cousin.
I was shooting something and the DP was this wonderful Italian guy. That's like so sweet, so nice, and so fun. Like, he was so nice. But you know, he had one of these accents. And so it was hard not to, and because he was so nice, and because One night, someone asked him like how he met his girlfriend, just kind of thinking they would get this random, like, we met at a bar. Mm-hmm. But he told this whole intricate, beautiful, romanticized tale of how they met. So naturally,
as at a bar.
At a bar. So naturally, as the shithead comic, I had to add the...
The rain was just perfect. We go inside the building. You can hear the rain drops. Am I saying that right? Rain drops. The music is playing. And at that moment, she shit on my chest.
Like, of course I had to make it about shitting on chests.
Yes, yes.
And I felt really bad. The poor Luca, the director of photography.
Did he ruin every shot by talking about a spicy meatball?
It's by, we turned this into a pizza. Everything became a pizza.
Eventually, you got to throw in a how do you say?
How do you say? How do you say? How do you say?
How do you say? How do you say?
Who did you like growing up, comics-wise?
The first one, well, interestingly enough, the first, like, comedy album that I really listened to a lot was Dennis Leary.
Uh-huh.
No Cure for Cancer?
No Cure for Cancer.
No Cure for Cancer.
Yeah.
Made all the more interesting by the fact that then I discovered Bill Hicks and went, oh!
Yeah. Oh, I could just go to the source.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh, I'll just go here. So that was sort of the first. And then... oh God! I mean, that, you know, I was also a big SNL fan growing up, mm-hmm. And so there were tons of sketches in SNL that I had committed to memory at various points.
Did you know those people growing up?
I didn't know any of them. No, you know, my dad had hosted the show a few times, but I didn't know any of them. It wasn't until, honestly, maybe 5 years ago that I finally went for the first time when he hosted. I think it was like the last time that he hosted. It was the first time that I was actually able to go to SNL, mm-hmm. which was insanely cool. And then, you know, that's where I met, you know, Bill Hader, who's a very good friend, and you know, Lonely Island guys, and mm-hmm. pretty much everyone there. And then shortly thereafter, I moved to New York and then was sort of there probably a little bit more than I should have been.
Hey guys,
hey, I was God. There a little too yeah. much to the point where like some of the crew members were like, God, are you just going to host or what? Jeez.
Oh, I don't know. Do you need me to?
And I said, yeah, do you need me to? I mean, I'd like to. Chances are if I do, oh, none of these other people will be here, but maybe you still will. And will you talk to me then?
Everyone has that great performance dream where you're just in the audience and they're like, there you host it! Alec Baldwin couldn't make it! Colin, get up here!
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, to me, that has really been the only goal that I've ever had.
You'll end up hosting. I think there's no question you'll end up hosting.
I mean, that's the one where it's like, it's when it happens, it'll happen, and if it happens, and it'll be great. But, you know, and then really, you know, then it's sort of... After Bill Hicks, then it sort of went off. That was sort of it for me for mm-hmm. a while. So Bill Hicks was so... I listened to Bill Hicks during a whole bunch of different stages in my life. And he serviced different facets of whatever it was I was going through at that time. Oh, I'm really angry and pissed off. Oh, there's Bill Hicks for that.
Right.
Oh, I'm really into, you know, expanding the man. there's Bill Hicks for that, too. And so, you know, in college, I'd say, obviously, Mr. Show was a very big mm-hmm. thing for me, just watching Mr. Show. And then also Tenacious D.
Yep.
You know, I got started watching those HBO specials, and then around that time, then I started actually working, and I got to meet Jack and Ghost. You know, Jack invited me. I remember the first day I met Jack, he invited me down to the studio when they were recording their first album. So,
oh, that's awesome,
which was very cool. So, and then comedy wise, I'll just sort of like pick anything up now, you know, pretty much anything that's on, I'll grab it. Obviously, a lot of the David Cross stuff I like.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hedberg, obviously. That sort of goes without saying.
I think now there's sort of a golden age. And it's not necessarily reflected by what's on television. But I feel like there's a golden age of people doing really interesting performance stuff in the field of comedy right now, and there's a lot of it.
Well, yeah, it was so funny because, you know, I'd mentioned on the Twitter, which has been a great, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but it's been a great resource for me because I've been able to find out.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to work. It's
so
great.
Much stuff about it, which I sort of get that now. I sort of understand what social media platform is supposed to be in it. But it's so funny because I went and did the comedy Death Ray, and that's like one of those, just like Scott Ackerman just said, oh, you should come do it. And I go, fucking, holy shit, there's Scott Ackerman.
Oh, you already did it?
Yeah, I already did
it. Oh, I didn't realize.
Oh, no, I already did it.
The live show.
Not the live show.
Oh, no, you mean the
podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just the podcast. And someone had replied like, oh, that's so cool that you're so into alternative comedy. And I had not heard that shitty, horrible phrase in so long. And I wanted to go, God, I remember hearing that phrase in 96, surely we've moved beyond that alternative. Because for me, it's just comedy.
Yeah.
There's really nothing.
Well, they just don't know what else to label it.
I got interviewed
for my show. I'd have a weekly show. And then like the LA Times lady, the first question was like, so what is alternative comedy? And I responded with a term they used about a decade ago.
Yeah. I mean, what is the mainstream comedy then? I don't know.
Well, as someone who does a lot of stand up on the road, it is different. It is different. It's. I don't know if I would call it alternative. I would just call it a different subgenre of comedy where the audience members who are going to see these shows probably regularly see comedy. They understand mm-hmm. comedy. They understand there's not as much hand holding in terms of like you can say ironic things. Without, if you're on the road and you say something really crazy or, you know, where you think in your head, of course, this is ironic. I mean, sarcastic. People will take what you say at face value. And they're like, why would you kick a baby? Like, no, I just said that. I don't you know.
But alternative, just that term is so loose. It's just like, you know, it's like naming music. It's like alternative music. Like if you had a bin, there would be Train and you could also have the Melvins in the same fucking category because it's all alternative, you know.
Yeah.
It's all like just a blanket term.
It's a blanket term. I think also for me, it's like I'm not going to go see someone at the Chuckle Hut. You know
right,
what I mean? And so if that is where for lack of a better term, a large amount of people go and see their comedy. I'm not going to go see that. I'm not disrespecting the people that perform there. I'm not disrespecting the people that go there. That's just not where I'm finding my funny.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, I don't know. That's just something that weirded me out because, honestly, all the people that I got into initially, they're all still around. They're all still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all, and now there's more places to do it. I mean, I was joking with some friends. It's like, I joined Twitter and now I've got like, I'm on a podcast tour in Los Angeles all because I joined Twitter. But it's actually great because I just get to go and meet a bunch of cool people such as yourselves and talk about a bunch of cool stuff and surprisingly, as I spit on your...
That's what it's there for.
That's what it's there for.
Spit on the pee popper.
And surprisingly, there, a lot of people are in, a lot of people do that. You know, the whole podcast thing I'm just sort of getting into, but yet it makes perfect sense. You know, it's just like you have the perfect choice to be like, oh, well, do I listen to, shitty radio when I'm in the car or the same records that I'm always listening to, or maybe once a week I'm able to listen to a podcast from these guys who I think are really funny and that makes perfect sense.
It's nice too, and it also it definitely when in the old days the only way to get your voice out was really to just make an album.
Yeah.
But comedy album sales are dreadful. And so you're just not, it just seems like the best way,
And you don't even need to do that anymore.
No, you kind of don't.
You really don't need to do that.
I'm
going to
make one next
anymore.
Year. I think I'll do an hour special next year, but
There's some good ones coming out. Like Anthony Jeselnik's album this year was great. Hannibal Buress's album was amazing.
Chris Fairbanks, Matt Bronger, Kyle Kinane.
Kyle Kinane's Death of the Party.
Death of the Party.
Number one on Amazon.
Is it really?
Yeah, number one on Amazon. But like there's albums, I think, coming out. I think it's a better time to put out a comedy album because you can just download it, I think
that's true.
It's easier because like you don't really go to a record store and get a comedy album. I mean, I used to, but now I think it's just it's more accessible. You know, I think it's a fine thing to put out now.
When I was working in Northern California last week, one of the locations we shot at was this place called Rasputin's in San Jose, and it is fucking awesome. Yeah, like I forgot these types of places still existed. And like I bought I bought a bunch of Simon Pegg stuff, and you know, like it was just the epitome of, oh, this is where you go to get cool indie music and movies, and they still have these brick-and-mortar stores. It made me very happy.
They like Streetlight, which was a couple in the Bay Area. There's like one in Santa Cruz and one in San Francisco, like Streetlight Records. Is that what it is? Streetlamp? I don't know. But like the Bay Area still has more than L.A. Like L.A. is just left with...
Amoeba.
Just Amoeba. Everything else is... Aaron's is gone. Rhino is still... Is Rhino still around?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
A lot of more. I've been trying for the better half of the pet on and off for like 3 years now, trying to get a documentary made about Tower Records.
Oh, that's cool.
Tower Records started in my hometown of Sacramento. And so I pretty much like growing up in Sacramento, that was sort of like the main thing that you were most proud of. It's like, oh, well, Tower Records from Sacramento. and it really is, because everyone goes like, oh, wasn't that started in L.A. on Sunset? It was like, nope, started in Sacramento, the Tower Theater. And I've been trying, of course, like right when I started going out and trying to like get financing, you know, for a documentary was right when, you know, the economy just went, you know, up Satan's anus and shit down upon.
It's a good idea for a documentary, too, because it also can be essentially about, you know, the record industry in general.
Well, at first we were trying to do that, but then we realized it changes so quickly it's impossible to do.
Let me ask you.
It really is. I mean, it changes so much that it's impossible to cover that for a movie.
Let me ask you this. How much money do you think it would cost to make that documentary?
Pull out your wallets, guys.
What do I got? I think I got $100.
See, that's the thing, is now it's sort of, honestly, now we're able to change it. Because when we first started, we were under the impression that we needed, you know, a real, we were going to shoot on the red. Well, we shot some stuff. We shot some footage up at in Sacramento. And we had like a red camera, and we had a very small crew, but we had a crew together, and we were doing it, and we shot some footage. It was like $20,000, but we got it, and we shot for 3 days, and we're like, okay, that's great. That's the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, red cams can run you up.
But now, with the Canon cameras.
Yes.
The 5Ds and the 7Ds.
Oh, yeah, those are gorgeous. And the lenses are cheaper.
Yeah, no, we're hopefully going to be able to shoot the rest of the movie probably for that much money.
That's awesome. Because I was saying, you could go on to something like Kickstarter. And
I thought about maybe doing that. That would actually be sort of an interesting way to do it. Because the thing that's so sort of fascinating, one of the reasons why Tower has been this thing that's constantly been lurking for me, is whenever I tell people about it, the people then begin to tell me their own personal relationships with the store. Mm-hmm. And these aren't even people that worked at the store. These are the people that just went. You know, I was wearing a Tower Records pin at a party, and Robert Downey Jr. says, "Is that Tower Records pin?" I said, "Yeah." Oh my God, Dad. He's talking to me.
Bigger than the pin, you're Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, and is that a Robert Downey Jr. face?
He started telling me about, you know, when he was a kid, and he'd just sit around in a Tower Records. You know, it's like everybody, pretty much everyone I talk to, when I tell them about it, they always start to sort of tell me. So I'm thinking, as one of the ways of maybe doing it, is because I just found out about this Kickstarter thing like 2 weeks ago, because a friend of mine has actually got a project that he's trying to do, which is very cool. But I figured, well, you know, there are enough people that worked at a Tower Records. You know, if we get maybe one or two of them to donate $25, that could be a nice little source of income right there.
Paul Tompkins.
For the movie.
Paul worked at a, and he has an amazing bit about working there, and then and then Fabio coming in.
Fuck nuts. Yes. I haven't talked to him about that.
You were never prepared to see Fabio.
Go get the album.
I'm sorry, Paul, if you're listening, and I just did a bad impersonation.
But like, he has a great story.
Cake boff.
Yeah, but just, he worked there, and like, you know, he talks about how it was a horrible place.
I want to talk to him about it.
It's not on, it's on the CDR. It's on the CDR compilation, the Comedy Death compilation, when he did it up in San Francisco.
Because you know what you can do with Kickstarter is that, you know, you can have levels. So if someone so if someone donated like $1,000, you could put them in the documentary to tell their Tower Records story.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I think you'd raise money like that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Guys,
thanks. We are on the precipice of greatness.
Thanks for just being the wall for me to bounce ideas off. Hey, I've got a good idea now. I'm going to run with it.
Let us be your idea wall.
Hey, guys, can't be on the podcast again. I'm running short on some.
Even got my Tower Records keychain that was given to me by Russ Solomon, the founder of Tower Records.
That's awesome.
Dude, he started Tower Records in his dad's drugstore in the 40s.
Wow.
Wow.
That's how Tower Records started.
And then it just kind of went out with a whimper, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, it tried to hold on for a long time. I remember by the time it came to Hawaii, where I'm from, like it was kind of...
Oh, well, mahalo, my friend.
Oh, aloha.
Get some more letters in your alphabet, Jonah.
Save it up. But but by the time I was aware of it, it was like the chain corporate record store. And I never knew it had kind of such ground rootsy, you know, beginning.
Well, that's the really weird thing is that everyone sort of knows it as the sort of big chain, which was actually sort of, you know, a good thing. That was sort of the success of it because it was the first really truly worldwide chain. That there weren't, you know, there were regional ones. You know, if you lived on the East Coast, it was like Strawberries.
Newberry Comics.
Yeah. Newberry Comics.
Newberry Comics. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, in terms of pretty much just, you know, known for music.
Strawberries and, like, Sam Goody.
Strawberries and Sam Goody's. You know, it was
coconuts. Got it.
Goody got it.
Exactly. Goody got it.
There was a Sam Goody in San Diego, like downtown San Diego, which I found.
Tower was actually in pretty much almost every major city. There were 89 of them in the States, and there were over 200 of them worldwide.
Now, did he still own it at that point, or did he sell it at that point?
He had to, when they first went bankrupt... In 2004, I believe, he sold off the rights to Tower Records in Japan, which still exists and is very popular in Japan, which is something that he did not want to do. And then at that point...
Yeah, just keep it in America, guys.
At that point, he then... he was essentially no longer really truly in charge of the company because he had to sell some of it off, and then banks got involved, and then they didn't know how to run record stores, and then it sort of...
So
that combined...
Let me see if I understand this. So you're saying that people that went into banking and had no training in the music business could not successfully run a music store?
I don't know how that math works.
You've changed my world
view. This is kind of awkward, though, that you're talking about this, because I'm actually working on a documentary about Tower Video.
God.
We might run into a couple of
things. You know what? Totally different point of view.
Might have to merge.
Are you in it? Are you in the? Are you hosting the documentary?
I'm not going to, like, host it. We're going to try and see if we can do it without hosting, because I don't want to... I want to try, you know... We're trying to find as many different ways to tell the story.
Let me just pitch this to you because you care about it so much.
Yes.
That I feel like you would be an excellent organic host without seeming hosty.
A narrator?
A narrator, presenter, you know, but like you going around talking to people and, you know, just... I feel like it would be interesting.
You could be the Michael Moore of Tower Records.
That's Michael Moore of Tower Records. Well, we're gonna go around. You know, we already have a deal with Russ in place, and we, you know, once Russ sort of signed off, we were able to sort of talk with a bunch of his generals, and they all said, hey, look, if you want to interview us, go right ahead. You know, we're ready whenever you are. So. I got a lot of interviews that I got to do, but right now it's just all about trying to find the easiest way to do it, because making a movie is not easy, and making a documentary is damn near fucking impossible.
It is not easy to make a movie,
no,
it turns out.
Not easy at all. I always said there's like three miracles with movies, and it's like proven even more true like in the last like 5 years, but like when you think about it, it is a miracle to get a movie made.
For right off the bat.
That in and of itself is a fucking miracle.
Yep.
To get... You've got an idea, all right? That idea is good enough that you can sit down and write out that fucking idea. Mm-hmm. And then someone else says, this is a good idea. I want to help you make this good idea. Flash forward to, you know, all of the other little sub-miracles within the miracle of getting a movie made, one of which is, holy shit, it's not raining today. We could shoot that scene. Do you know what I mean? It is a fucking miracle to get a movie made. That's one. Second miracle is it's a miracle if anyone sees it. If anyone sees it. I mean, even if you're able to just screen your movie once, that's like a huge thing. We've made it into the North Carolina Altar Boys Film Society.
My favorite.
And you're so lucky. You're like, oh my God, I'm going to screen.
For people you don't know.
For people I don't know. I'm going to screen this movie for people I don't know. That's so great. It is a fucking miracle if anyone will see your movie. And then the third miracle, which is the most difficult of all, totally objective. It's a miracle if someone else thinks it's any good and actually tells other people, hey, you should see that movie. It's pretty fucking good. Yeah. Those three miracles, like, and if you catch all three, that's like lightning in a bottle.
I always think, because I think this with television,
we
too.
Like to do two miracles for sainthood.
I always think it's movies is three.
Yeah, with movies it's three. And the irony is...
Nice try, the Lord.
Is the irony is that the miracle happens to maybe one movie every week.
Mm-hmm.
But think about how many movies are made that don't get to where that
and
is.
And I think the other side of the miracle, because I say it on television all the time, like it's a miracle that any television shows ever get made.
True.
It is a miracle that, just on top of getting made, that they're any good, because basically, like you going back to the process where you said someone reads your script and goes, hey, I think this is worth making.
Yeah.
I got about 20 people who work at this studio that would love to ruin this for you.
Yeah.
And oh, so it goes through so many different other channels. That it's amazing to me that things like so many people have to agree on stuff as it goes through the process. That's where it's also amazing to me that things actually ever get made and don't just get stuck in development cul-de-sacs forever.
Like one of the things I read this year, because like we were the good guys shot for 9 months, relatively under the radar out in Dallas, so we didn't really have. It was a very different kind of like TV. Sort of feeling, and because we're in fucking Dallas, like there's not like a big TV. You know, I mean, I'm not disrespecting Dallas, but you know, and there were other shows that came through Dallas, but it was just sort of different because we were so far removed from Los Angeles and the sort of Hollywood sort of.
Oh yeah,
thing.
I just performed in Addison. I know.
Yeah, so it's just very, very different, and that was one of the great things about it. But one of the things I read that was actually really funny is that. All season long, there was this whole question of, you know, well, are we going to be on the air? Are they going to stay on the air? Are they going to pick us up? And whenever we were close to, say, like a premiere, then with amongst the crew, there would be some crazy rumor like, I hear we're going to get picked up. I hear we're going to do this. And it's like, guys, we're not even on, like, let the show be on TV first before we get there. So that was like the extent of it. But one of the things I read, which was really fucking funny, and I wish I can remember who said it. But it was an executive who was talking about how is part of Matt Nix was involved in the AFI showrunner class, and it was someone involved with that, and he said that, you know, at no point has an executive said about a show that was canceled, we just didn't give them enough notes. If we had paid a little bit more attention and just gave them a little bit more notes, that show really would have had a shot.
We saved it.
Really would have had like a chance.
Could have done it.
And with just and talking about like my own personal experience, that's the really strange thing I've noticed about television are the fucking notes. Because... Mm-hmm. Most of the stuff that I've ever done is single camera stuff, but the two times that I've done sitcom stuff, which, you know, on the whole, I want to say, oh, well, that sounds like a great gig. You know, you show up, you work 9 to 5, you shoot one night, that'll go pretty late. But you have, it's about as close to a 9 to 5 as you can get.
3 weeks on, 1 week off.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty ideal gig. I can't think of a more horrific way to try and make comedy.
It's so hard because you have a studio that's paying for the production and the network that's posting the production. And
they
you get
just
two sets of notes.
And they just walk down in the middle of your week and just start telling you, you want to know what? What if he says this? And what if he says that? And what if she says that?
More purple sweaters!
And I swear, I remember... I mean, I've only done them twice, and I don't think I'll ever do it again until they... I mean, it would really be under really crazy special circumstances for me to sort of do it again. I just
can't breathe in that kind of format.
Yeah.
To think that someone is going to come down and watch a dress rehearsal and say, this is what I think he should say. And that person has no...
With my marketing background.
With my marketing background, I was
an assistant and my boss left, and now I'm head of development.
Listen,
so
here's the deal. I'm a marketing executive, so let me just push my weight around. Here's the deal. She needs to be in tighter clothes, and I need to see more of her bosoms, if that's at all possible.
What about that'll make the show funnier. That'll make the show funnier.
He needs to either lose some weight or button that shirt up, because that look that he's got going on right now is not going to work. Never mind his comedy delivery. I think he's got some work to do.
It's like the notes Homer gives on the Poochie episode. It's like, whenever Poochie's not there, the other character should be saying, hey, where's Poochie?
Oh, jeez. I mean, it's just... And it's strange, because it's not like you don't get notes in movies. You do. But they can't give you notes about... stuff, well, technically they can, but it can't really give you notes on stuff that you've already shot, which is a bonus, you know. But then again, if you're just making your movie, you are witnessing a miracle.
When it gets made, then people like it. Yeah. I met Jenny Wade came on Attack of the Show.
She's fucking hilarious.
She's hilarious.
She is
genuinely hilarious.
Genuinely one of the funniest people I've ever met. Has absolutely no filter. She really has no filter. She will say stuff and my jaw will be on the floor going, "You what? Really? Wow. Bold. That's a spicy Jenny Wade right there." She will. There's no hold bars.
But she kind of. She has that same kind of comedy brain.
She does.
That you know, that so many comedians that I like actually, you know, they have, where it's just like, it's just kind of like you said. Wow, I was looking straight ahead. You just broadsided me from over completely. Here. I did not see that coming.
Oh, completely. And it was, we actually share the same manager. And so I had been hearing about Jenny for a long time. And then she came in and read for the show when we were casting. And just based on just her acting ability, I was like, she's great. She's really funny. She's sharp. You know, you guys should probably cast her. I think she's really good. And they did. And then it wasn't until I got a chance to really, like, hang out with her. She's, you know, with the exception of my wife, probably one of the coolest ladies I've ever met, you know, and she's fucking hilarious. And even her tweets, have you read her tweets? You follow
her? Yeah,
on
Twitter? I follow her, yeah.
So half the stuff I go, oh my God, I would never say that. I would, for shame, Jenny Wade. She's got the knack. She definitely has a knack. And she's one, I think she's funnier than, well, it's not a competition, but I think she's...
No, it's an intense competition.
I think she's just as funny, if not funnier, than a majority of the, you know, incredibly attractive women that are also funny, that are out now. And apparently,
Joan Rivers.
According to magazines, those are the only funny women.
Those are the hot ones.
Apparently, to the magazines.
Yep.
Four. Yep. They found the four.
There's four.
Yeah.
There's four. I'm saying Jenny's number five.
Well, I like to...
She was on the other fold-out of that Vanity Fair.
I like to... I mean, listen, my comedy Bible is Maxim. And I just feel like they really get me as a dude. I mean, we're all dudes. We love sports and punching each other in the nuts and
don't
pouring beer on...
Hey, guys.
Titties!
What?
Oh, we can't show... Oh, okay. Never mind. Dr. Dre is coming up soon.
Dr. Dre will be right out.
Dr. Dre will be right out. No, Jenny Wade's hilarious. And I, you know, I actually sort of felt bad because I felt that she was sort of underutilized on our show in terms of her comedy chops.
Play more of a straight character.
Yeah, I mean, our show was kind of hard because there was sort of... It was a hard line to dance on in terms of what was... what we could get away with comedy-wise and what we had to do sort of straight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we really sort of were able... We were able to sort of figure it out a little bit towards the end of the season, but then Fox sort of
sort of canceled us. They've kind of canceled us.
They
in that they've told Dallas Film Commission that we're not coming back, but they
but not you guys.
But not us specifically. And maybe not and they won't Dallas. Actually make an announcement because they'd want to just, you know, have it be like, "Oh yeah, good guess. Yeah, that's not coming
that's
back."
That's
so yeah.
It's so weird how this business works that, you know, like Joan and I work on a show together and sometimes we'll find out that the show has been picked up from like the graphics department.
Yeah,
they're like, oh yeah, we got more.
Yeah, it's the post department saying it's like, yeah, we have to do this stuff for you guys to go HD. Wait, so
what?
We're coming back?
Why are we going to tell? Okay, yeah, we're not. So they told us not to prepare anything, so you guys are done.
Yeah,
what?
It's weird. I mean, everything with the good guys was ass backwards. I mean, from the very beginning, it was just because we were sort of like an experiment and. From the very beginning, well, we didn't have a pilot. We just went straight to series, just 13 right out the gate, which was really fabulous because it sidestepped a lot of, you know, oh, will we or won't we? And God, and the pilot's really great. And maybe we'll see you, you know. But it was really strange because we got picked up and we were going to be on in the summer. And then before we even premiered in the summer, they picked us up for the fall. And we're like, great, fabulous. But then they announced that we were going to be on Fridays starting in the fall. But we haven't premiered in the summer on Wednesdays yet. Or
okay, okay.
So it's just everything was just sort of super, super, super scattershot. And essentially now it's pretty much the same thing. And they're kind of just not wanting to. And I can understand it. I completely understand it. They're not wanting to announce that the show didn't do what they wanted it to do.
You know why? They probably didn't give enough notes.
Probably didn't give
they
enough
They didn't
notes.
Give enough notes.
Some executive going, if only I justified my job. Like,
a little bit more. Yes. Like if I could just walk onto a set of people who are in a business I don't really work in and tell them how to be funny.
But that's actually one of the reasons why I'm sort of really stoked to be doing all this podcast stuff is just to be able to sort of be, I mean, even just going and doing like the Comedy Death Ray podcast, to be able to just do comedy that is not of any. There is no filter. There are no notes.
No one's going to tell you that you can't do stuff.
There is no defined role because pretty much everything I have to do is. It's not even straight man. Straight man doesn't yell and scream shit. I would say since Something About Mary, the straight man turned into, okay, we just need a straight man-ish character who goes through enough crazy shit that eventually he screams and yells.
Right.
And then that's the resolution of our film. That's pretty much what straight man has.
Straight man going crazy.
We as an audience realize that he's just as crazy as everybody else. Therefore, no real guidelines.
Yeah, and then the crazy people think that he's crazy. That's pretty much what it's like devolved to. So just to be able to come and do other stuff like that is really nice.
Well, there's no question that you're going to be A-okay, Colin Hanks. I really hope you do this documentary. If you need any. You know, like, if you do the Kickstarter thing, let us know, and we will remind people that they can go on to Kickstarter and do it. So what other stuff is, do you have anything else coming up, like, work-wise? Are you going to take a break?
Well, no, I mean, right now it's really, I'm kind of like...
Are you just waiting on word from the Dallas Film Commission?
Waiting on word from the Dallas Film Commission.
Colin Hanks, it's the Dallas Film Commission! Yeah.
Woo!
Guns in the background.
No, really. Right now, I don't know. Right now, it's sort of I'll ride out. I know this is going to air in the new year.
Early in the new year.
I'll ride out the holidays and sort of. You know, I'm kind of back to this is the actor grind. That's sort of great. All right, I worked 9 months. Great, fabulous. I'm unemployed now. Now what?
God damn it! That's so weird about our business. Like we're such. We're such, like, weird kind of, I don't know.
Freelance contractors?
Well, no, we're freelance contractors, but in the sense, I mean, it's, I know, I don't want to say gypsy. It's sort of like aroma culture.
You don't want to gypsy.
No, but it is. Like,
gypsy actually works. I always, the thing I always describe it, because I got a lot of friends that are not in the entertainment industry at all, and they're constantly going, like, what's it like? I go, if you really want to break it down, a film crew is like a circus comprised of groups of people that cannot be more unlike each other in any way, shape, or form.
And you get really close over a really short period of time, and you think you're going to be BFFs forever, and then a lot of those people, you may not see them again for 10 years, like, we worked on that thing.
Totally.
And it's such a weird existence.
And it's really funny whenever I hear someone go like, oh, man, he's one of them actor types. They don't deal with real people. I'm like, really? Have you met a Teamster? Yeah. You met a fucking Teamster?
They're pretty real.
On location?
Pretty real.
Because like all the Teamsters that I've met in Iowa and Texas, if those aren't real people, I don't know. I don't know who real is. I don't know what that means anymore. But yeah, I'm back to that sort of unemployment thing where I don't quite know what the next thing is, and I really want it to be something great and something good. And if it's just something shitty that pays well, yeah, that'll work too.
That's fine too,
I suppose.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's a business still. It is a business still. You gotta make
there's
money.
The things you tell your friends about, and then there's things you just do for money.
Yeah. You're a businessman. I always like that business when rappers be like, well, you know, I got all this other stuff going because I'm a businessman. Like, wait, so you're just saying you like to make money?
Yeah.
So you're like everyone. Everyone is technically
just a businessman.
By nature of our species, we're businessmen because we have to.
Straight up.
We need money to survive, and we want to make as much of it as possible.
Yeah. There's a 5-yard penalty for giving me the business.
Giving you the business. You're not that kind of businessman.
Giving him the business.
He's giving him the business.
Giving him the business.
But yeah, so I'm gonna go back to that. What it is, I really truly don't know because things. Things have changed so much in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's really, I really genuinely don't know if it's going to be like a movie or if it's going to be a TV show or
a TV movie?
Or a TV movie or what the involvement of, if it'll be more than just acting in it or trying to actually.
Do you have like an ultimate thing, like besides the Tower documentary, do you have an ultimate thing? That if you didn't have, like, because Tower documentary, you got to go out and produce it, you got to make it. If someone was to just hand you a project and say, Colin, it's the president of Hollywood calling. You're a businessman.
That's
a
great Leah Thompson impression. Needs work.
Well, you produced a movie a while back, right?
Yeah, I produced a movie called RX many, many moons ago, and then was sort of very closely involved in getting Buck Howard off the ground, which was not as many moons ago, but still a few moons ago.
It's a fun watch. It's a real fun watch, though.
Thanks, man. Yeah, so for me now, it's, I don't know. I mean, I've got a couple of different ideas for possible TV shows, but to, again, to actually sit down and
But do you want to be like a leading guy movie actor, or do you want to be like, you know, well, I'm content being the funny guy, like the funny guy in the movie. Like, is there any specific thing that you want to see yourself do?
I don't know. It's always the hardest thing. It's like whenever someone says like, what, you know, when the agents go like, all right, so what do you see yourself doing?
What are you asking me for? Why don't you go do your honest, job?
Yeah, yeah, I honestly really don't have an answer for that. It's the exact same thing of like, what's your favorite movie? I can't really do that because I have different
Transformers 1987.
Transformers.
The animated Transformers.
I got so many different moods. You know, like, would I like to be able to be that super sexy leading man? Yeah, sure. But I gotta go to the gym for 5 hours a
day. That is work.
That's gonna happen.
Fat.
That is, it's gonna be a lot of work. Really, I think more than anything else, I just want to be able to do stuff that I'm really super genuinely excited about and don't really have any reservations as to whether I can make it work, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much of the stuff that I've done is really sort of the first thing you have to deal with is like, okay, how the fuck are we going to make this work? Like,
right.
How can we make this better than what it is? And I don't mean any disrespect with anyone that I've worked with before, but there just comes, you know, there's so many, again, it's like all the different miracles. There's so many factors in trying to make something really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're constantly just going like, fuck, how do I make this, you know, better and without stepping on anyone's toes or making anybody uncomfortable. I think what I would like to do is be able to go, fuck, how can I make this good and not worry about upsetting anyone because all I'm going to be doing is, you know, stepping on my own feet.
Right.
So I guess that is coming up with my own stuff and writing my own stuff and sort of helping trying to get that stuff made. I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of... At this stage, I sort of feel like in this day and age, anyone can sort of do anything.
There are very few excuses anymore.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're not.
Really. Well, I don't know how to get. Well, yes, all the technology is very inexpensive, yeah, and you can edit it yourself, and you could.
Computers come with it now. You could just.
Steve Jobs literally is telling you.
All you got to do is learn it. That's all you got to do. But like so. You know, between that and the really sort of the, quite honestly, the proof is that, you know, people just do it and then they get it done. And the more and more they do it, the better they get at it, you know. And I think, like, when I started, this is going to be a super cheese ball fucking example, but I think it's true.
Remember, I talked about how I showed a girl Transformers, the animated movie.
Oh yeah, you're right. Okay, so then this is great. But you know, when I started out, acting was like around the time that Good Will Hunting came out, and that was like a prime example of like two guys that had been working their asses off trying to get careers going that wasn't going anywhere, and they just said, fuck it, we'll do it ourselves. Yeah. Worked out pretty well.
Yeah, those cats are wicked smart.
They're wicked smart. You know, I mean, it's a lame example, but it's a good example, though. It's a good one because it's that. You know, that is those two dudes just...
If only it worked for Mini Driver. If only.
If only it worked for Mini Driver.
And the ponytail guy from the bar.
You guys, we're going to write the sequel. Better Will Hunting.
It worked really, really good for Matt Damon. And then it worked good for Ben Affleck. And then he pissed it away. But then he got it back.
He got it back.
Yeah, the town was good.
He got it back. The town was really fucking good.
Yeah, we just watched that the other night.
That's an extremely enjoyable film.
I am a Ben Affleck fan, and I have actually always been a Ben Affleck fan.
That's hilarious.
And I think he's finally, from what I saw over the years, was like, he's just trying to find the thing. Like, he's just trying to find, and I always thought he was great, and I think he's going to do it. I mean, I think he's going to be like...
I think he figured it out,
He's fucking great.
But you know what's so funny about Good Will Hunting? Also helping out Ben Affleck and Matt Damon also helped out Mindy Kaling in a weird way.
Because she wrote
Matt and Ben, the play that was making fun of them.
That's right.
And that's what got her noticed by Steve Martin and brought her out to L.A.
That's true.
Yeah. So it helped out a lot more people. Than
and now when I see Mindy Kaling's career, I go, really? The girl who did the fucking play about Good Will Hunting, she's a producer?
She has a production deal?
She has a production deal? I mean, yes, she's funny, but fuck.
Come on.
Yeah.
We gotta have her on. We gotta have
you know, Miriam, a PA from the show we work on, was like a PA with Mindy Kaling when she wrote that play.
That's awesome.
And she's like, "Hey, I need to take some time off because I'm gonna do this play thing." Everyone's like, "Good luck."
She's fucking funny, man.
Yeah, she's great.
She's really funny.
Yeah, we have her on the show.
Well, Colin, we're pretty much at the end of our hour.
No, in my experience, podcasts don't have endings. And go on for 2 hours.
If you do the Kevin Pollak show.
No, the Comedy Death Ray one went for 2 hours.
Oh, did it go for 2 hours? Yeah. The problem is you want to talk to people for 2 hours. I always just feel like, the listeners probably have an hour-ish on their commute, and that's when they listen.
Yeah. Gives us more of a reason to bring people back.
Yeah, Colin Hanks 2, coming back in 6 months.
Well, we have to because part of the sequel is now that we're friends, we have to fight crime as friends.
Yep. We will fight crime, yes. Now that
fight the Soviets as friends?
The Soviets. We're gonna fight the USSR.
And we're the guys USSR. In the computer room, like, you know, pushing our chairs back from one computer, going to the next one, telling you where the ducks...
But we don't know where the USSR was anymore. Does anyone have a map?
CH plus CH VS USSR.
Well, so people can follow you at Colin Hanks on the tweets
with the underscore Colin in between the names
underscore Hanks. Did some other fuckwad get Colin Hanks?
Yeah, and he's been squatting on it for ages.
Twitter should just give that to you.
The whole Twitter thing was very strange because I got on it and then. And people ask me how I verified. I just, at that stage, I just went, hey, publicist that I pay a shit ton of money to.
Yeah.
Verify me on Twitter.
I know you want to charge me for every fax and messenger that goes out.
If you're
going to
be charging me so much money, fucking get me verified on Twitter. And they did, which is great. And what I should have done is said, hey, get that fuck nut on Colin Hanks and get him off and put me on.
But my name is Colin Hanks and I live in the Midwest.
I don't care.
I work at a post office.
The simple fact that I got on Twitter alone is like a minor miracle because I was so anti it for so long.
Yeah, it took me a long time.
But now I'm like, my wife just is so disappointed in me.
I wrote a whole cartoon about how much I hated it and how dumb it was. And then Chris was like, you should just try it, though. I think you'd have fun. And then I got into it.
It is. It's fun. It's awesome. It's fun. And anyone and like all those people. Like my girlfriend Janet wasn't on it for 2 years. And then she finally just got on it.
Yeah.
She seems to like it.
She actually fell asleep.
She's sleeping.
She fell asleep. We put her to bed.
She's probably got headphones on.
We put her to bed. She's like,
she's tuned us way the fuck out.
Don't want to hear any more
of
these.
She was tired of Googling everything we got wrong.
I don't want to hear what these guys are talking about anymore.
She's tired of hearing about all the titties I saw at the Dr. Dre concert. Nothing.
Are you coming to San Francisco for
I will be coming to San Francisco for Sketchfest. Yeah, I don't know if I'll be there for Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Oh, no?
I'm doing the podcast the next weekend.
Oh, okay. The last weekend.
The very last weekend. Yeah. Yeah.
Closing it right, guys.
It was a little meltdown show, a little Nerdist podcast.
Yeah, I just figured, like, I'll wait until, you know, Thrilling Adventure Hour does something cool. I go to Sketchfest, and then I'll hop on the train.
Nice, you got on at the right time, my friend.
I hopped on the train at the exact right time. I know Busy Phillips is going to go like, really? Been doing this for how long? And all of a sudden, you show up, you're riding the train to San Francisco. Great,
but it's like with Busy, it's so interesting because like even just we're just like walking out to where everyone parked, and this goddamn paparazzi. Like, was really, there you guys were just waiting out in back of Largo to stalk this poor girl?
Waiting for Busy.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's someone who knows one of the people from Friends.
Quick, get your cameras.
Actually, wait a minute. I know that we're supposed to be wrapping up, but
it's fine.
I remember specifically, because I went to school with Busy. Mm-hmm. We were an item in college back in the day. And I remember when we both got jobs at the same time. She got Freaks and Geeks and I got Roswell at the same time.
Right.
And I remember going with her to a place like a hookah bar in Westwood.
The Gypsy Cafe.
The Gypsy Cafe. Bringing it back.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And seeing you do stand up there.
That was a long time ago.
And the reason why we went was because little Seth Rogen.
That was the night Seth went up.
And yeah.
Yes, yes.
It was his first like stand up in LA. He hadn't like been doing any stand up in LA.
Yes, that's right. And he hooked that up through Linda Cardellini, who I had just done a show with.
Ah.
And so that's how that all tied together. Oh my God, I totally. Yeah, the Gypsy Cafe was so much fun.
That was a crazy place.
It really was. That's where I pretty much started. I mean, like, I did stand up in college and then took a bunch of years off. But the Gypsy Cafe is where I restarted doing stand up in 1998. And it was like the landscape of comedy at the Gypsy Cafe, that fucking open mic was like Galifianakis and Bamford and Patton and Paul. Paul F. was also more of a Largo guy, but just like. That core group of people that went through there, that I mean, it was just like a goddamn grenade of people that would eventually go off and do wonderful things.
Fucking unbelievable.
In the field of comedy.
And Seth Rogen has beat them all.
He really did.
Fucking the kid from Canada beat them all.
The stoner kid with the chuckle, yeah. Like beat everyone. Who's now in awesome shape?
In crazy awesome shape. See, you got to go to the gym for 5 hours.
You want $20 million a picture? You got to fucking go to the gym.
Fuck.
Unless you're Jack Black. Although yeah. Jack got in good shape, pretty good, decent shape too.
Yeah.
But then he gained it back a bit and started doing more movies again.
Well, when you sleep on a bed of money, it's kind of hard.
Yeah, it's
it's lumpy. Yeah. It's like they poke you in the back.
You don't want to get out of bed. It's so comfy.
No.
I'm going to stay in for a little while longer and count these ducats. But yeah, I just wanted to say that.
That's really awesome. I hope I had a good set. Was it a good set?
Did.
Okay.
You did.
All right. I think a lot of my comedy back then is just being awful. But that's fine.
No, I specifically remember you and I remember Seth. Those were
sort of the two that stuck out.
Fun times. And did you ever think someday we're going to do a podcast together?
Did you
What's a podcast?
What's a podcast? Yeah. What's a podcast? Yeah.
Someday a thing's going to be invented. A digital radio show, if you will.
A pod?
Yeah, I don't even know what that is. A pod?
What's a pod?
I don't know.
Like the pod people?
Pod people.
I still can't believe that this is all the stuff you need to make a podcast.
It's shocking. We can't believe it either. Tried to do it on the iPhone once, didn't work
out. Did you?
Had to redo that episode with Kevin Pollak.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, because his was the first that I did, that one's on fucking TV. They filmed that one. And I was fully expecting it to just be, you know, the iPhone app. And I think as soon as I see that one, that's when I'm going to be like, okay, I don't think I'm going to be doing any more podcasts. I don't want to go to some dude's house and speak into his phone for 45 minutes.
Let's just crowd around. Just crowd around. Yeah. Let's get right here.
Okay. Hold on. I got to take this call.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Colin. The end. Enjoy your burrito.
There you go.
I was going to say, no more burrito.
I hit this.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.